We are here with Arthur Stoltz from Cluster Mission in ESOC. He's a spacecraft operations engineer for Cluster, but I leave your introduction to you, to yourself.
Yes, so my daily job is to be a spacecraft operations engineer, and I'm in charge of planning the mission, preparing the mission timeline, so that is the commands that shall be uplinked to execute a mission in terms of doing scientific measurements, so preparing the instruments and also conducting orbit maneuvers. And in addition, we also do the post operations work, such as performance evaluation of the spacecraft, and also in terms of the data return that we get. So all the housekeeping, so the spacecraft health information that we get to make sure that the spacecrafts are in a good state, and yeah, to make sure that the science data is coming down and is being stored and collected and then sent to the scientists for analysis.
Perfect. Actually, I have to say I have a special fascination for Cluster because it's one of the few missions here in ESOC which have nicknames, correct? It's four spacecraft, actually.
Yes.
So you have Samba,
yes,
Rumba.
Latin dance, so Rumba, Salsa, Samba, and Tango.
Very interesting. Actually, we are talking to Arthur today because a few weeks ago, he gave a very interesting talk, at least to my judgment, about concept of open source applied to space mission or space industry, if you want. And I found very fascinating a few of the things that Arthur told us, especially because I know our audience is made of the proper people. So space geeks and proper geeks, proper nerds, I will almost say. Yeah. So I found this combination fascinating. So what was exactly the core of your talk? What is the main idea behind your talk?
Well, the main intention is to motivate people to think about, to apply the idea of open source to space technology in general. Because I'm convinced that, the general thinking about space technology is that it's high technology and that it's only accessible to a few nations in the world, and that it's governed by confidentially and secrecy. So people do not like to share much information about their space programs because they consider it to be a top-notch technology, and they don't want to have other countries or people taking benefit of this knowledge. But I think this is not how it should be. I'm a big fan of open source, and I think that we all, as a humanity, benefit from sharing this kind of information. And I think it should not be limited to software, 3D printers or smaller projects, but it can be applied to basically any kind of industry, automotive as well. But since my interest is in space technology, I would like to push this in the space domain, this open source idea.
This is really important, yes, because actually I was also thinking, attending your presentation, about how much in reality universities and university students are sharing when it comes to space. We also have in ESOC some program going on involving university, and of course at the university level it's much easier to share code, share ideas, share experiences, have people coming from all over the world maybe going to a specific faculty because it's well known and they pursue in a very good way space, aerospace engineering studies and stuff like that. So I was also thinking that is a valid point. Is there any specific parallel you can see between the experience in developing software for space in universities and what can be done with ESA software or in general with space operations software? Some lesson learned that can go, you know, through this barrier between university and real space industry?
I'm not proclaiming that we should open source the ESA software, the software that is used to operate the spacecraft. at that point. Actually, it's a little bit different. So it's a little bit funny, but it's just that since I'm working for ESA, that I have started to get this interest in open source. So I work here since 4 years now, and I came directly from university. I did my diploma degree and then my master degree. I was all in this Windows and Microsoft Office world till I graduated, and then I started here to work at ESA. And what I saw is that all the mission critical systems, everything you need to operate the spacecraft, is running on Linux systems or even Unix and some other systems, but it's mostly now Linux. And I think the main reason for this is that it's more reliable. It's just like with the web servers, most of them are based on Linux. Yeah, so this is the one thing that attracted my attention, that it's considered to be a reliable system because it's open. But the other thing I realized is when I graduated, that all the fancy tools that I had during my studies, freely available because I got the student licenses or even free license, academic license for using MATLAB and even my Windows PC, this all was not valid anymore after I graduated because I was no student anymore. So I was actually obliged to buy these costly licenses in order to continue using, for example, MATLAB. Okay, there are other ways to still use the software without paying a license, but
I don't know any about it.
And I'm not advocating this, but unfortunately what I think is that it's kind of people are pushed into this direction, and so I didn't find this a good way to go. So I realized that, hey, there is actually software available that that can be used as a replacement for, let's say, MATLAB and Office, and it's freely available. It's just that people don't really know about it, and that's the same thing that in university or even in school, this is not really taught. Students and school children, they would know how to use Microsoft Word, but they do not know an open source and free alternative to it. And this is a pity, because you should not reserve this kind of science processing and tools that you need to do productive work to those people who have the money to buy those licenses. So that's my point, actually, to make technology and tools available for people, and to let them contribute and let them share their work.
So in terms of open source software you can use in space operations, let's aside the SCOS, we call it the spacecraft operation system, which is something ESA developed and so forth. But when it comes, for example, to analyze data or to find clever ways to develop tools for your own flight control team, have you found any inspiration in open source packets available in the open source world? I know you do.
Well, in fact, we use a lot of open source tools. For example, the Eclipse framework and some processing libraries and so. So it's used. And it's well known that also many companies, they use open source software to support the business operations. But the question is also how to feedback and how to give back. The dilemma that I see here is that because the thinking is implanted into students and even in school, that if you want to have something in software, you have to pay for it, and only then you get something good. So this is, this commercial thinking is a little bit too much implanted into the people. That's why even now, you mentioned that there's this, let's say, the academic sector, so the universities, and then there's the, let's say, professional space domain sector, so the space agencies or companies. I don't really see so much of a difference, unfortunately. So, of course, the university is more interested, or they're doing more publications about the work, because that's part of what university, what students have to do to graduate. They have to write papers and publish the work and go to conferences. But they're not really publishing all the details. So I worked on 2 CubeSat missions, so small satellites, university satellites. And it was really hard to get, to get really information about how other teams designed their satellite. Of course, you could find a lot of theses or dissertation papers, conference papers, but they were describing more or less what the system is capable of, what they're doing and the results, but there were no schematics or technical drawings that you could get from them. And this is the pity, this is the problem that I see here, that also there are universities and students and they want to increase knowledge, but somehow they adopt this concept of, yeah, knowledge is value, so we don't give it out for free. And this is what I would like to see, that this changes, so that in particular for the CubeSat and for the small satellite sector, that universities are more openly to share this kind of information in order for everyone's benefit, because we see a lot of these small CubeSats being launched, and from the academic part, I would say half of them, they just fail very early in the mission lifetime, because they repeat errors that somebody already had done, but they did not knew about it because it was never published. So this is where I would like to see a change.
So it's not only about software, but for example, also, so as you said, open source schematics, maybe sharing ideas or ideas that have been also flight proven and validated. So you know that for a specific subsystem or a specific part of a CubeSat, you have a valid and working model which you can eventually build upon. So in terms of security, what do you think about the contrast between security by obscurity, which is kind of mainline in the commercial available software, because you don't have the source code in your hands. You can go through and say, ah, look at this. This is clearly a bug which can be exploited, versus the idea of open source where, of course, the code is there, so even the bugs are immediately found by clever people which might try to exploit it. But with the same speed, I personally think a lot of very, very kind people work immediately to close the bug and to solve the bug. So do you see any security problem in extending maybe the open source concept to space operations, even at a university level, when it comes to people that might try to send commands to a small spacecraft launched by a university?
Yeah. So my focus is really much narrowed down onto CubeSats, and particularly on CubeSats from universities, so academic missions. Mm-hmm. I'm just focusing on this aspect because then it makes quite clear what is my intention. And so when we talk about safety in this context, I don't think this is, first of all, it's a big issue for CubeSats, because scientific and academic missions, they want to... I think there's nobody who really wants to hijack such a kind of mission to make something stupid with it. There should be, of course, safety included. And this can be easily done by using, for example, encoding of telecommands and using passwords and keys. But this has really nothing to do with if the design is openly shared or not, because in the end, this is not a matter of design, but of let's say of password management and how you make sure that this information is safe. The point you raised is with the exploiting, let's say, bugs in the browser world. We know that every browser, they have different. At some point or the other, they have some bugs that are being exploited. But what we see is that mostly, at least from my personal experiences, I'm using Firefox and it's getting the updates very quickly. Whereas for, let's say, Internet Explorer, you might get this notice in the public news that you should not use this browser for the next few days. And that makes me wonder, what's wrong with that? It's because it's such a huge thing that it's not even manageable anymore. Because with open source projects, you always have a big community and there's so many experts involved. And there's this quote that no matter how large your team is, it's not always the smartest people that are in your team. So if you have an open source community, it's much more likely that you have really smart people. They would never probably work for your company, but they're willing to contribute to those open source projects. And So for me, open source goes hand in hand with safety.
So basically, your idea is the perfect shared project is sharing schematics, sharing experience, sharing code, maybe sharing people efforts at least.
Yes.
What is the perfect recipe? And do you have a precise idea where to start from? For example, would you like to start advocating for this vision of yours in a specific university, or maybe you know already something like that exists somewhere? Is there anything that our listeners could look up and say, this is going in the right direction? Yeah,
I have talked to some of the CubeSat vendors, because in the CubeSat community, what we see is on the one hand, we have the universities, and it's getting more and more universities who are trying to build their own CubeSat. And in particular, developing countries are joining in. So there's a lot of, let's say, African universities who want to build the first CubeSat or even the first satellite of their country and launch it into space. And they more or less have to start from scratch because they have no resources, because nobody's sharing this kind of information. And then on the other hand, you have the companies who are selling these CubeSat parts. So the power systems and onboard computers, and they're quite expensive. And so if you imagine a university in a developing country, what choice do they have? Either they start from textbook and from scratch and try to build their own satellite, or they go and buy those components off the shelf, which are very, they might be able to afford it, but still they have to pay a lot of money, and then the learning effect is almost zero because they just have to put this thing together and launch it. And if there's something wrong with it, they most likely will have to ask the company who sold it to help them to repair it or to fix these problems. So the learning effect is zero. I have seen in the last 1 or 2 years that there is some momentum towards open source in the CubeSat community, but I feel it's still very, very slow and very much behind. So there could be much more be done in this area. From what I have done as a starting point is to start an initiative called LibreCube, which was started about 2 years ago. And the idea of this initiative is to foster this open source paradigm for CubeSats. And I would hope that that there will be more such activities in the CubeSat domain.
Is there a website or an online resource that our listeners can go to and have a look, like this LibreCube project, which is actually just the name of a liquor, you know, twisted a bit. Yeah, it's not Cuba Libre, it's LibreCube. Yes,
yeah. Well, in fact, originally it was supposed to be called OpenCube, so Cube because of CubeSat, but this name was taken, so we stuck with Libre. Like LibreOffice, but it fits very well because Libre means it's open, but it means also free in the sense of free like in free beer, but also free like in free speech. And so it's LibreCube.net is the website, and it's a platform for exchanging those in those CubeSat related projects, but also to let people come together and provide a platform for communication and exchange.
Perfect. Interesting. Thank you very much to Arthur Stolz for his time. I'm pretty sure that the most geeky listeners we have are now really cheering for this episode. And I hope I can talk to you in the future with more interesting insights in this project. And maybe, why not, maybe together with some students that will take advantage of the groundbreaking ideas you were explaining us here, yeah? Thank you very much, Arthur.
Tante grazie.
Prego, prego.